Hello, can you hear me? We are excited to begin our first session breakout. This is for Jeff Ford, and it is the relational air, learning to breathe new life into struggling relationships. So if this is not where you want to be, you might want to move. But we're just going to go ahead and introduce Jeff Ford. I just want to remind you to think of the five things that you've learned that you can share with people. And also, in the back of your pamphlet is a survey right here. Voila. If you can, fill that out and turn it in by the end of the conference today. So it's for both session blocks, so make sure that you wait until the end. Jeff Ford is a personal friend of mine, and he is an excellent speaker, and he has a lot of experience and knowledge, and I think you're in for a treat. He received his bachelor's in psychology from the University of Utah and his master's in marriage and family therapy from Purdue. He is a licensed marriage and family therapist. Jeff is a member of the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapy. He has contributed to the field by publishing articles about the practice of marriage and family therapy and regularly speaks throughout the community on the topics of pornography, marriage, and addiction. In addition to his clinical practice, he has been an instructor of psychology and adolescent development on a university level. Jeff specializes in working with individuals and families struggling with sexual addiction. He also has invited Stephen Real Croshaw to participate today in his presentation. Jeff Ford.
Okay, I just want to say thank you as a board member for Utah Coalition Against Pornography. This is the third time we've done a conference down here in southern Utah, and we always have a great showing. It's always so neat to see that, you know, suppose a small town like St. George area can produce the same numbers as far as participants in the conference that Salt Lake Valley does. So each year in Salt Lake, we do a conference at Little America, and they have about 1,000 to 1,200 people that attend, and we have about the same numbers here today. So I just want to, on behalf of the board, just say thank you, and we hope that you find your time here useful. I also want to just a special thank you to Steve and Real. They are so kind to participate with me today and sharing some things with you that I hope are useful. I have a lot of respect for them, and the fact that they're willing to step in and kind of add their personal experience to what I'm sharing with you today, it means a lot to me, and I know it will mean a lot to you as well as you hear their story. So to get started, I want to share a little bit about what trauma is. So obviously, whenever we have an individual in the family, whether it's a child or a parent or spouse, who is addicted to pornography, there's a form of betrayal. And the betrayal comes because when we're in a family unit or a marriage unit, we're kind of in this life together. And when there's difficult things that happen in life or pain that a person experiences, we're supposed to take that pain to our spouse or to our parents or siblings to get support. And that's what makes families great, is because they're always there. They're built-in support network to help people. The problem with a person who is struggling with pornography addiction is they're also struggling with the inability of reaching out to get the support and help that they need. And instead of reaching to the realest people in their life, their parents, their spouse, or their siblings, they're reaching to fake people and getting nothing in return. And so it's kind of a form of betrayal to themselves, but it's also a betrayal with their family members or spouse as well. And as they heal, that reaching out becomes a lot more frequent and more effective. And so, and that's the goal. And we're going to talk about how to kind of bridge that gap as we get started today. So also, I want to tell a little story. I served my mission in Atlantic Canada, and when I was on my mission, we were we took a P-Day to go and visit some people that didn't get visitors very often, and it was in Nova Scotia. If you're familiar with that, that's as far eastern on the seaboard that you can get on the North American continent. And it's kind of a treacherous road getting there. And on the way to that visit, it began to snow a little bit, and there was a light covering of snow on the road. And I was driving. I wasn't breaking the speed limit. I was going a little bit slower than the speed limit, and I started turning right on the road. The road veered right, and all of a sudden, the car started sliding. And gravity says that, you know, when you turn right, you start sliding left. Thank goodness we didn't, because on the left was basically a cliff that went down into a ravine with a river at the bottom. And we surely would have been killed if we would have went off the road. But instead of going left, we went right. We hit a boulder, and we went end over end, landing on the roof of the car, basically in a little viaduct type of thing. And it basically caught us. We were able to walk away, but as you can imagine, it was quite traumatic. And even to this day, you know, my mission was, you know, 20 years ago. But even to this day, every once in a while, I can, when the car is turning right and I'm in the car, not able to drive or whatever, I feel that motion turning right, and my body feels that. My heart rate increases. Even though that happened a long time ago, those feelings of trauma and fear sporadically sometimes come up. Every once in a while, I make a terrible backseat driver. My wife will tell you, if she was here right now, she would be like, "Yes, he does." And some of that's just because I guess I'm a bad backseat driver, like some of us are. But it's a little bit loaded because of the trauma experience that I had. And like I said, it was 20 years ago, but with trauma, the past can instantly become the present. So first I want to walk you through what this is like for a couple as they are getting into the healing process and into recovery. So for an individual who is struggling with pornography in the past, he may have been using an iPad that you can see here as something that he would use to view pornography. And that could be something that he used regularly. It could be something that he only used once. But in his healing process, as he kind of opens up and talks about how he is struggling, he will obviously talk about, hey, you know, these are the things that I've used to look at pornography, and one of those being the iPad. And so when a wife learns about that, that causes trauma. That the association to betrayal and pain wraps up basically into that iPad. And women who experience trauma obviously go through the same things that I did from the car crash. Their heart rate goes up, their eyes dilate, sweaty palms, shortness of breath. They experience all those same signs. It makes it a little bit different with relationship trauma, because one of the first responses that women have when they experience this type of trauma is they kind of start shutting down. And they aren't going to their network of people that they would normally go to in life when something happens to them. So an expert on trauma, his name is Peter Levine. And he has some wonderful things to say about this. He says, trauma is not what happens to us. It's what happens to us when in the absence of an empathic witness. So what that means is, if a woman is closing down and she can't talk to anybody, including her spouse, about what's happening, the trauma intensifies. And so in a lot of cases, betrayal trauma can be more significant than trauma associated with like tragedies, with like a car accident or something like that, because in some ways women feel like they're forbidden to talk about what's happened to them. The other thing about betrayal trauma that is extremely damaging for women is, normally in life, if this is something that just happened to them, guess who the first person that they would talk to about something difficult in their life? It would be their husband. But all of a sudden, if the person that they trust and go to the most and that helps them the most is also the person who harmed them the most, then a woman is very troubled. Like, she didn't know where to go. She doesn't feel safe going to that primary place of safety, to her husband. And so that isolation becomes even deeper for her to experience, and the trauma intensifies. Thankfully, as they get into recovery, when we do a phase one Lifestar program, they walk in the door, they see that other couples are going through the same thing, and that's when the healing begins, is when they can start talking about and reaching out and starting to address and confront the problem. But what happens is, as husband starts improving and making progress and healing, trauma takes a long time. Trauma expert Judy Crane talks about how trauma is kind of recorded on a molecular level. Not only is it something that the brain remembers, but it's also something that the body remembers. We all know what body memory is. You know, if someone takes your favorite seat at home as you watch TV and you have to sit somewhere else, it feels a little different. If you buy a new bed that first night, it's a little different because your body's not used to it. Judy Crane talks about how trauma is literally recorded at a molecular level. Your body remembers it. And so it takes longer. And when women are trying to unravel what they are traumatized about, their husband is learning and getting out in the light and feeling really good about getting support and not having to deal with this by themselves. They're making progress. But it's a longer process also for the wives, because sometimes people don't think that the women need as help as the men, but they do because of the trauma. And so what happens in the present is, you know, maybe the husband has 1 month, 6 months, a year of sobriety. They haven't looked at pornography or anything like that for a year. But they may be on the iPad on the floor, and the wife may see him looking at the iPad, and it may be totally innocent activity. He may be reading the scriptures or something like that, totally legitimate. But she doesn't see that. And so what naturally happens to her is a huge trigger. And this is where women need the most help. This is where they have felt the most pain. They see that iPad as a threat, as a betrayal. It's linked to that trauma. Just like when I'm in a car and it starts turning right, just the right way, it'll totally activate increased heart rate, dilation of eyes, etc., in my body, just like it would for a woman. So that trigger occurs, and her body remembers. And the thing about trauma is it's very, very fast. It happens before she can even think about it. And all of a sudden, she's sometimes very accusatory on one side of the fence. She could be becoming aggressive. And a lot of people that are helping couples are very confused, because they see the husband who's got 1 month, 6 months, a year or more sober. So why is the wife making a big deal out of this? What's wrong with her? She must be crazy. But the reality is it's a trauma response that takes a long time. And so I'm so glad you're here to understand this so you can help these women and help them understand that they're not crazy. Because what happens in their support network, if we're labeling them as crazy, we're also showing them that we're not going to be able to help them when they experience these feelings. So it increases the isolation. So what happens in the relationship is, you can see here, husband is kind of confused, like, what? I'm reading the scriptures. What is your problem? And if he becomes defensive, it makes the trauma worse. And she's kind of lit up. And the reason she's lit up, ladies and gentlemen, is because her body is responding to that. Because in her body is responding to the trauma. And she cannot see through this big monster that you see here. She can't even, her body's moving so quickly that she can't comprehend the fact that he was reading the scriptures doing something positive, because everything in her body is showing her that there's alarms and something terrible happening. Something that I want you to remember is any time anxiety or fear goes up in the body, cognitive functioning, meaning how clearly you can think, goes down. It's an inverse relationship. So anxiety goes up, ability to clearly think goes down. And so that's what trauma does. And so a lot of guys feel terrible because they're being treated like this guy. But the reality is, like, he's doing a good job, and it's really important for guys to have a support network that they can go to in order for them to, because sometimes their wife's not going to be available to help them and reassure them, hey, you're doing great, and so forth. Because it's brutal sometimes when someone's responding to you as if you're this person, but you're actually doing really well in your life. That's kind of it's a painful process to go through. The problem is, though, ladies and gentlemen, trauma is very deceptive. Everything in that wife's body, or sometimes it's a parent's body, it's a mother or a father, everything in their body is kind of responding as if to their son or their husband or family member like this. And it takes a long time to recognize how to slow this whole process down. The first thing is that I tell guys is realize, hey, look, she's not responding to your sobriety. She's having a trauma response. She needs your presence and being calm. Because what happens is, if sometimes guys, that pretty much the canned response that many men have, unless they're taught, and Steve and Real are going to talk about this a little bit too, is they become defensive. They start dismissing their wife's feeling because, hey, I've got 6 months sobriety. What is your problem? What's wrong with you? You must not be doing your work. They try to disprove. They go back in the past and they say, look, I've been doing this, this, and this. Why are you, what's your problem here? And they become very defensive. And the problem with that is, the more defensive they become, the bigger the trauma also becomes. And so it's a huge distorted reality for both people. They're both not responding to each other with what their real needs are. The real needs are masked. They're covered up. For the man, they're covered up by shame. Because he's like, why am I getting in trouble? For the woman, they're covered up by trauma. And the trauma response is very significant. Her body literally thinks it's in the past. Just like when I'm, even 20 years later, if my car turns just the right way, to the right, my body is truly in the past. So, Steve and Real, if you guys would mind coming up, and if it's okay, I'd just like them to kind of share maybe one or two experiences, take 5 or so minutes, there's a little clock here, in sharing a time where you, Real, had a trauma response, and what it was like for you and your body, and what it was like for you with your shame. And then we'll go over how to own that trauma in a few minutes, and we'll talk about that again. Okay. So is that okay?
Great. We need to say just one little thing about why we're here and how we would qualify to be up here. Real has experienced dramatic trauma because of my behaviors, lies, and deceit over decades. And multiple attempts at coming forward. And my behaviors included pornography, masturbation, adult establishments, and acting out with prostitutes. And 3 distinct attempts coming forward at trying to stop. So there were repeated betrayals. So Real has experienced dramatic trauma, of which we didn't understand anything about until really about 8 years ago, began to understand a little bit about it. And our story really goes back 40-something years. She came into the marriage with me not knowing that I had issues with sexual addiction. I didn't know I had issues with sexual addiction, and I didn't disclose anything to her about my behaviors before we were married. She thought that I was a worthy man for her hand. And so her trauma, and that's what we'll want to talk about today, obviously, is related to my lies, deceit, and betrayal. And we'll talk a bit about how we've, over a period of many years, begun to understand more about trauma, and how I, as a person who has affected her through my lies and deceit, need to be able to help her through her pain. So maybe we could tell a couple of stories. We're going to tell one that happened, actually this is a while back, but Bill, why don't you
start, when Jeff's talking about the iPad, my iPad was my husband's car, because he had picked up prostitutes in that car, and when he came forward 10 years ago, I said, for the first time at that point, we'd been married 32 years. For the first time, I set a boundary. And I said, I will never ride in that seat where you've picked up prostitutes. So you either need to sell the car or plan on me not going anywhere with you. Which he immediately sold the car and got a different one. That was, for me, a way of saying, I need safety. And this is not a safe place for me. But it took me a long time to figure that out, to say, this is what I need, and I need to speak it and hold it and say, this is a boundary for safety. And so it's 10 years later, actually August 25th, just a few weeks ago, was our 10-year mark of sobriety, of his sobriety, and of my starting to work my own recovery. But it took 3 decades of pain, going through hell, and ups and downs. And life was good most of the time. 7 kids, active in the community, in the church, and all of that. But the trauma that we're beginning to talk about more and more is really what we focus on, because we cannot afford to lose the women to this betrayal. And we're losing them by the hundreds of thousands.
Because of a lack of understanding.
Lack of understanding, not only from their husbands, but from those who may be in the helping community. And so this is a very passionate part of what we do nearly full time.
We had an experience a couple of years ago. We were in a store, triggering places, happened to be a Walgreens store. And evidently, I didn't see this person, but Real did. Inappropriately dressed woman, Real saw her and was triggered and was sure that I had seen her.
I was sure that this was a person that would be triggering, the way this person looked. But we went through the store, I didn't say anything, I got out to the car, and I totally shut down. I looked out the window, and I now know what the feeling of trauma feels like. It feels like a rock on my chest. It's like, I can't breathe, but I don't want to talk about it. And so I turned and looked to the side. Thankfully, we probably had 6 years of good recovery work, good recovery work. But the trauma had hit me. And I just thought, you know what? I can't trust him. I can't go anywhere with him. I can't take this guy anywhere. Because he's going to be, you know, I made it that it was his trigger. And so when I looked at the other side, I shut down.
So I could tell that Rill was hurting, looking away and emotionally withdrawn from me. And I didn't know why. And innocently I said, I can tell you're hurting. Can you tell me why?
Didn't want to tell him because I made it about him.
And it's interesting that I would be emotional about this at this point. The trauma is real and it's caused by me. It's caused by my behaviors over years and years and years of betrayal and deceit and lies and repeated betrayal, deceit and lies. And so she said, finally, this is what happened. And I felt betrayed. And I felt like you would have been triggered or you were triggered and I got in the car and you didn't say one thing about it. Well, in this particular instance, I hadn't seen this person and I wasn't triggered. And frankly, I was able to stay present and able to respond correctly. That doesn't mean that I always do it, I promise. I want to, but I don't always do it right. And so I said to her, help me understand what's going, and she explained it and I said, I didn't see this person, but I am understanding of your pain. Now, in Rill's book, there's this little 4-point script, and I'll just give it to you right now. And it would be great if each one of us guys that have been through this situation of betraying our wives would memorize this. It's not really easy, but the fact that I betrayed you and lied to you over a period of many years has obviously hurt you, and you're experiencing that again right now. You're experiencing that pain and that trauma and that breakdown of trust right now, number one. Number two, no wife should have to go through that. And I put you through it. And for that, I'm sorry. Number three, I want to assure you of my commitment to my recovery. And I am sorry that you have to be patient with me as I continue through my recovery, but I want you to know I'm committed and I want to be patient with you. And number four, what can I do for you right now? If a man can say that with an honest, open, humble heart, it will help his wife because he will hold her pain.
It will. Every time I've heard that from an honest, humble perspective, and I've heard it from my husband, and in a setting where there were two different men saying that to their wives, and one of them said the right words, and it fell totally flat. It had no emotion, no feeling, nothing. And I just sat and looked at him. And then the next guy talked to his wife about something that had happened. And he said that with this humble way. And I was bawling. I was bawling because it was somebody feeling my pain.
That's what we need to go. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I just want to, can we just give them a quick hand real quick? I love their story, and I'm so thankful for the experiences that you guys shared. But notice, if you looked at, or if you listened to Real's response, her first response was what? To close in and not say anything. And we know, for ladies, for you out there, that's your recovery, resisting that reflex to pull in and not say anything. The darkness never helps. It just doesn't. But the first impulse is to pull in and not say anything and pretend that everything's fine. And I'm so glad that Steve had some good recovery. Even this was 6 years of good recovery, and they had this happen. This is real. Ladies and gentlemen, and I always tell couples that if they can develop the skill of being real for each other, providing a real response, that the truth will set them free. When she can honestly tell what's really happening to her, and he can provide an honest response that he's responsible for, it will create a lot of safety. And it's hard though, because initially, especially if it's earlier on in recovery, where they're not recognizing the trauma, they're not recognizing those signs in their body of like closing down, the trauma is very difficult to see through, to see what the truth is. Like in Steve and Real's case, they had 6 years. I work with couples all the time that have a good amount of sobriety, or they're doing really good work, and it's still really hard. And what happens is the trauma just kind of goes back and forth between the two of them. And both, you know, after a day or two later, both people feel bad about how they behaved. Women say and do things. I've had the smallest little women turn into Rocky Balboa in their trauma moments, where I've had to tell guys, like, I had a guy, his wife hit him and totally broke his nose. And he was so deep in his shame, he didn't feel worthy to go and get it fixed. So for almost 2 months, I told him, I said, look, his nose was literally crooked. He could barely breathe. I said, I will not see you again unless you get into this surgeon and have your nose fixed. I called the surgeon. I arranged everything. He got his surgery that week. Because his shame was so deep, he hurt his wife so much, he didn't feel like he deserved getting any medical treatment for his nose, because he deserved that injury. So the men need help with this too. They feel horrible when they see their wife experiencing this trauma, because deep down, they know they did it. But they don't know how to access. They don't know, they need guidance and support and how to bring what they know deep down and have the courage to just say, I did this. This is happening because of me. And that's what it takes to defeat the trauma. It takes the truth and nothing but that. And I have worked with countless couples, because it's really tricky as a therapist, because if you bring a couple in and you're talking about the very things that are triggering to this couple, you have to know how to diffuse the trauma in that room. And I love what Real talked about, the difference between a man who said it just because that's what he was taught versus the man that's sincerely, genuinely learning how to help his wife. And he recognizes that he doesn't know how to do this. He's humble. I'll have guys that are humble and sincerely seeking, and I will tell them the words to use. And even though they're kind of parroting me, it provides that same response to their wife. It's totally calming. They don't have to fight to get to him anymore to help him understand how she's feeling. Because the only answer is bringing the truth in. And the truth is, she would never have felt that had he not betrayed. And the light that comes when a couple is able to face that and feel that is the healing that helps these couples one experience at a time. And this skill is so important for in some ways for the rest of their marriage. And I didn't ask Stephen Real, but you know, I'm guessing that every once in a while, even though they've got how many years of recovery under your belt? 10 years. Every once in a while, a trauma trigger will arise. And it'll come up, and thankfully they know how to handle it. So just to review some of those 4 steps that Steve mentioned, you have to have the courage, gentlemen, to step into the light. First thing is you have to legitimize her feelings, validate them. Tell her, this is happening because of me. I did this to you. What you're feeling is my fault. Owning it. if I wouldn't have done the things that I did, you would not be feeling this way. And it is one of the most amazing things that I get to see as a therapist, day in and day out, what happens when a male protects his wife this way by standing and using the sword of truth. It's kind of interesting because he's having to be very upfront about some terrible things that he did. But the effect is sweeping. The peace that fills the room after that is totally soothing to both people. When a guy can take ownership, it also reduces his shame. I'll always tell the guy after he tells his wife, hey, what was it like for you to own that? What was it? What did you feel as you were speaking that to her? And invariably, they will say, it feels right. It feels peaceful. And there's a Shakespeare play that talks about two brothers. One of them's trying to kill the other brother, and they had it out for each other for a long time. And then he kind of repented of his ways and wanted to develop his relationship back to his brother. And there's a phrase in the play that says, "'Twas I, but 'tis not I." And that's that part that Steve was talking about, that, hey, the fact that you're feeling this way is evidence of me hurting you. No wife should ever have to feel this way. This is what I'm doing now in recovery. This is what I'm doing. I'm visiting with a therapist. I'm visiting with SA Lifeline group. I'm getting light each day by praying. This is what I'm doing. What can I do for you? To show her that, hey, that was me in the past, but this is me now. And that's so important because remember, trauma makes a woman's body feel like it's in the past, remember? So for him to kind of cue her and say, hey, this is what I'm doing now. And talk about, hey, I made a huge error. I did this. I betrayed you. It did happen. And the more they can do that, the more that they can put it in the past. And together, they will both feel soothed. They will feel soothed by each other. The marriage becomes a safe place again. They recover what their marriage should be in times of difficulty and pain. And most importantly, they don't let the trauma own the relationship, because too often that happens. And we only have like 1 or 2 minutes left. But I want to end with, if it's okay, Stephen Real, do you mind just sharing what it's like for you when, do we have enough time, Lindy? Okay, just what it's like for you, especially Real, when your husband does that, how that affects you. And then Steve, I'd like you just, even though it's hard to lean into the pain of admitting that you did something wrong, how it affects you, just briefly, when you do that.
We say that recovery from the addiction is honest, humble, accountable, and connected with God and others. And when I see that behavior, I know I'm safe. When I can see what addict looks like. I can see it in his face. I can see it in his behavior. I can see it in the way he sits. I now know what addict looks like, but I also know what recovery looks like. Recovery looks like energy, focus, empathy, humility, the humility and the honesty, the transparency. We just had a couple of days ago another going to the movie. It was a fine movie. It wasn't triggering. But the person sitting three chairs down put her very long, short legs up on the chair, and he didn't get honest until the next night.
No.
That night. But it was so great because we could talk about it and then we could work it through, and that, yeah, it doesn't go away. We call it healthy living now. This is healthy living, and our relationship went from this quite, it was very peaceful. We did not have a fighting relationship. It was a date every Friday night, even when he was doing what he was doing, and I had no clue. But our relationship went way up in the honesty, the transparency, and I own my stuff. That trigger at Walgreens was my trigger. And I was able to see it as my trigger, not about him. And my sponsor, who I work with still, was able to help me work through that as well. That's that surrounding group of help.
What we've learned is that the challenges associated with trauma are equal to or greater than the challenges associated with addiction. And I know that my challenges are dramatic. And it really comes down to a toxicity to lust. That's what sexual addiction is. And the honesty is empowering. God wants to help me, help her, help us through this challenging situation in this mortal existence. And as I am willing to be honest, I am empowered. And I actually can feel that. I can feel, as I am honest, the empowering nature of that. And then I am able to draw closer to her instead of push away. And so the challenge is, if I deny my feelings or if I deny her feelings, the net result is that we want to disconnect. If I am, or as I am, and I'll put it in that tense, as I am honest with myself first, how this is how I'm feeling, honest with her how I'm feeling, she can be honest with me how she's feeling, then we have a foundation that we can work through the challenge that we're facing in an honest, positive way instead of going to what we call drama. So what we want to accomplish is each time we think, okay, when is the finish line? When do I get finished with this lust trigger or with this trauma trigger? When do I get finished? Has anybody hit that line yet? I have not. I don't think we do in this life. So what we have to do is we learn at this by doing that, since we are still going to experience these things in our lives, that we acknowledge them for what they are. And when I do that, I'm empowered. And then we grow closer together. That's when it's great to go out and get a shake. We don't go and get a shake together if we've been the other direction. She can't sit far enough on the right-hand side of the car, and I can't sit far enough on the left-hand side of the car. But when we have met together in honesty, then even though there's a console in between, we can get close. Thank you, Jeff.
The other thing I want to say about that is, as friends and family members of couples and families that are going through this, it's also very tempting to kind of think, well, when are they just going to get better? Why is she still having this response? It's 10 years later. What's wrong with her? And it's so important to be educated about the long-lasting effects of trauma. And it's not this finish line that they talked about. It's the tools that we use when the issues come up. And I want to promise each of you, especially those of you who may be afflicted with this, that peace can and will be there if you are able to use and unlock the door to bring it into your marriage or your family. And it always works. I've done this with couples. It doesn't matter how many times, but the truth has that effect. Whenever you use the truth, it'll set you free. It takes humility is the price you have to pay, openness that the wife has to pay to do their own work. But when we turn the key with those things, the healing and the soothing and the comfort will come. I just want to thank you for being here, and I hope this has been useful for you. I just also want to thank Steve and Real. Their story is amazing. I just love hearing it. Thank you so much. Let's give them a round, please. And give yourselves a round so that you guys can go out there and be supportive of those people who need the help. So thank you once again.